Paris in 1936. Dora Maar, a talented photographer and painter, meets Pablo Picasso and is instantly drawn to his intense creativity. Their passionate relationship, marked by love and Picasso's infidelities, pushes Dora to the edge. The Paris Muse by Louisa Trejo is a fictional retelling of Dora's journey, set against the backdrop of Paris and the French Riviera. As Picasso paints during the Spanish Civil War, their relationship darkens. With World War II approaching and the Nazis invading, Dora suffers a breakdown and is hospitalized. Atmospheric and powerful, the Paris Muse sheds light on Dora's life, ensuring she is no longer a forgotten figure in Picasso's story. In this episode of PageCast, Louisa is in conversation with writer, editor, literary critic and publisher, Karina Sturig. Enjoy.
Good afternoon and welcome to PageCast. I have the great honor of speaking to Louisa Trejo about her latest novel today. My name is Karina Sturig. I'm a writer, editor and publisher based in Cape Town, and I'm a huge fan of Louisa's fiction and her writing in general. Louisa is a multi-talented artist and one of the kindest human beings I know. She inspires me as a woman and as a writer. She is the author of the highly acclaimed novels The Lodger, published in 2014, The Dragon Lady, 2019, Mad Woman, 2022, and now the latest, The Paris Muse, published earlier this year. Louisa currently lives in London, but lucky for her South African fans, she frequently visits us here in South Africa, and she will be launching The Paris Muse in Johannesburg, Stellenbosch, and Cape Town in the next few days. Louisa, welcome. It's so lovely to hear you and to see you.
Thank you so much, Karina. And I just want to say that the honor's mine. I have so much admiration for what you do as a writer, a publisher, a supporter of other authors, and, you know, for you as a person. So it's a mutual fan club today.
Louisa, the four novels I mentioned, including The Paris Muse, have something very, very essential and specific in common. Can you please tell us what is it that these novels binds them together?
Of course. Well, I didn't plan this, and I feel like my subjects chose me. But the more novels I write, the more it becomes apparent that a strong theme is emerging. I am drawn to writing about trailblazing women, women who were outliers and pioneers, who struggled to conform to society and often suffered, but achieved something extraordinary.
One of the moments in your novel, The Paris Muse, which is about another trailblazing woman, and that is Dora Maar. In the novel, she says that one of her wishes for her own creative life is to create images that make people see the world differently. And in a way, when I encountered that phrase in your novel, I thought this is exactly what you are trying to do in the portrayal of these women. You want the world to see them differently. You are not portraying them in images. You are doing it in words.
Thank you. Well, yes, that's what I want. I mean, they're all extraordinary women, and they've all been overlooked by history to a certain extent. And so it's become a mission for me, you know, to write about them and to try and bring them to the world's attention. And I guess another, you know, theme that I think about a lot is that in some ways things have changed for women over the centuries. And in others, they haven't changed at all. You know, there are issues like unequal pay, domestic and sexual violence, and the fact that I think society still has problems with, you know, strong, outspoken women.
Talking about these women, so Dora Maar is at the central figure in The Paris Muse, but can you tell us about the three other women that you wrote about before?
Of course. So my last novel, Mad Woman, was about Nellie Bly, America's first female investigative journalist. And in Nellie's day, which was the end of the 19th century, women journalists were only allowed to write about things like fashion, society gossip, arts reviews. But Nellie was determined to write serious, hard news. And in order to get her first big scoop and be noticed, she went into an asylum undercover to expose the wretched conditions experienced by patients. And, you know, that would be an extraordinary thing to do now. But at the end of the 19th century, when those asylums were death traps, and moreover, women were expected to be ladylike and reticent, you know, she was really an exceptional person. And she changed the face of male-dominated journalism. And she also, you know, got much more funding for the care of the mentally ill. And she continued to do extraordinary things. You know, after my novel ends, she, for example, went around the world in less time than Jules Verne's protagonist, Phileas Fogg. And she was on her own. And, you know, she was really a remarkable, remarkable woman.
And the protagonists of The Dragon Lady and The Lodger?
Yes. So The Dragon Lady was about Lady Virginia Courtauld, who is an extraordinary free spirit. She had a tattoo inked on her leg. It went all the way up her leg, and rumour had it only her husband knew where it ended. And she claimed to be a descendant of Dracula. She couldn't fit into English society, perhaps not surprisingly. And she and her husband ended up in the Eastern Highlands of Zimbabwe, in the middle of nowhere, where they built a replica French chateau and helped the Black Liberation Movement in its early stages.
Lodger, yes, she has something in common with Dora Maar, and that is she is also an artist, but of a different kind.
Yes, that's right. So both Dora Maar and the protagonist of The Lodger, Dorothy Richardson, were trailblazing artists and way ahead of their time. But Dorothy Richardson was a writer, a British modernist writer living in London in the, you know, the first decades of the 20th century. And a bit like Dora, Dorothy broke boundaries in her art. She was the first person to write stream of consciousness in English. And also in her life, she had an affair with H.G. Wells, her best friend's husband, and she discovered she was bisexual in an era when it was illegal to be homosexual. Mm. So they're all boundary breakers.
Yes, and they are all incredibly fascinating women who have either been forgotten by history or are remembered for something that they maybe should not be remembered for. And in Dora Maar's case, that is a very famous other artist who was.
It was Pablo Picasso. And if people know of Dora at all, they mainly know her as Picasso's weeping woman. You know, the subject of many portraits. But it's as though tears were the most interesting thing about her. And in fact, she was an incredibly gifted photographer. Her black and white images are mesmerizing. And, you know, do go and look them up, because reality and surreality in them, that's disturbing and enthralling. And they just grabbed me and wouldn't let go. She was also a painter, a poet, and a left-wing activist. So, you know, such an interesting woman. And I just thought she deserved her own story.
Absolutely. But what I wondered, after reading your novel, I had a look at her biographical notes online. And also, I, of course, encountered all the other women whom Picasso painted and used and abused for his art. So I wondered, all of them seem to me in their own right to be incredible personalities and with stories to tell. Why did you choose to focus on Dora?
Well, to me, she was the most interesting and poignant of his lovers. And I think that she was the only one who was his match intellectually. And so, you know, they had these fiery arguments. She was able to stand up to him. I also thought that her influence on him as a person and as an artist was fascinating. We can talk more about that. I think he owes her a huge unacknowledged debt as an artist. And also, quite frankly, she had a dark side. She was neurotic. She was transgressive. And I think Picasso was drawn to her dark side because he had his own dark side. And all of those things just meant that for me, she was the standout mistress, lover to write about.
The way you portray the relationship is extremely compelling. But the moment I started reading and I was encountering all these incredibly famous characters that are walking yes. through the pages of your novel, and also understanding the time span in which you chose to place the majority of the story, I immediately wanted to know that how did you handle this incredibly famous cast of characters in during such a turbulent time in world history? What kind of research was involved in order to write such a very personal, deeply intimate story of these two famous people?
Well, the research was absolutely fascinating, and I went down 1,000 rabbit holes, very happily. I think Parisian society in the 1930s was incredibly rich because there were all these artists and writers who used to gather and exchange ideas and fall in love. And in fact, there was such a huge cast of characters that my problem was who to leave out, who to include. You know, as you said, it was during a very turbulent time in history. The Spanish Civil War and World War II began during Picasso's relationship with Dora Maar. And Nazi-occupied France was also a huge and fascinating topic because Picasso chose to stay in Paris. You know, despite the fact it was overrun by Nazis, his art was degenerate. Dora's art would have been considered degenerate if it had come up under the Nazi radar. You know, there wasn't enough to eat. People lived in fear. And it just was such a rich period in which to lose myself. No, shaping the novel and choosing which characters to include, they were challenging.
One of the characters that I was hoping to encounter, but I understand why you had to make these choices, was Gertrude Stein, because I thought yes. At some stage she is going to walk in and cause chaos.
Yes.
But
yes.
She's one of the ones that I noticed you left out.
Unfortunately, although Dora got on very well with Alice B. Toklas and painted her portrait, but unfortunately, for the reasons I mentioned, I left them out.
Well, they survive in her art. What I was also wondering about, because of the deeply personal and intimate nature of the kind of portrayal that you present us with of this deeply troubled relationship, I thought, did you have material, archival material available to you that where you could access that inner life of Dora Maar?
Yes, so I could access it through her letters. And she was also a poet. And, you know, those poems really bared her soul. And, you know, so I got a very good sense of her angst, mainly through the poetry. She wrote Picasso quite desperate, abject letters as well. So it all came across very clearly.
And they are preserved for posterity.
Yes, yes. And also I think his portraits of her, his weeping woman portraits, are a kind of archive because he portrays her in so many states of disintegration. She's scarcely human in them. You know, her head's thrown back, or she's biting on a handkerchief. She weeps tears of blood. Her hands are claws. And I think it was an image he had to paint over and over again, perhaps to exorcise the troubles in their relationship and also, you know, the dark effects in history.
Mm. I thought that one of the most daring aspects of this novel was choosing to write it in the first person. And yes. I was very moved by that very strong voice that comes through in that first person narrative. And I wondered, where did you find that voice?
Oh, thank you, Karina. Well, you know, it's the first novel I've ever written in the first person. And I've always been slightly wary of it because I think it can make the reader feel quite claustrophobic, because the world of the novel, you know, inevitably comes a bit narrow and solipsistic. And to counter that, in my first drafts, I did write some passages from his point of view. But they really didn't work. And so I took them out. And as I was working on the novel and reworking it, that voice just, you know, just emerged. And partly from absorbing her own writing and her art. You know, she just came to life in my imagination.
One of the beautiful aspects of this novel is the way you write about the art. So in that first-person narrative, you channel all these incredible thoughts about Picasso's work, but also her own work. And it is deeply moving how you describe some of the images or the photographs that they worked on together and separately. What role does visual art play in your own life? And do you have a favorite artist or an artwork that you were inspired by?
Well, that's a very good question. So my ex-husband was a collector of contemporary art, and it didn't speak to me. And for years I thought, well, I don't really like art. You know, it's not a big part of my life. But actually writing this novel, I kind of rediscovered my love of art, and that was really wonderful. I mean, I love Dora Maar's black and white photographs, and they really speak to me, and I would love to have one on my wall. I also love Picasso's early periods, the blue and rose periods are my favorite. And, you know, I have so many favorite artists, really, too many to mention. I mean, I love Henry Moore, both his sculpture and his etchings, Barbara Hepworth. I mean, I love the Impressionists and the Post-Impressionists. And as I said, it's been a period of rediscovery, and that's been wonderful.
Louisa, the way you write about art, about Picasso's and Maar's, about their photographs and their paintings, the art that they did together and separately, it was deeply moving for me. And I was very curious to know, what role does visual art play in your own life, and whether you have a favorite artist or a favorite artwork that might have inspired you?
So, Karina, that's a very good question. It was quite difficult to write about art because it was it's a non-verbal medium. But I so enjoyed the process of thinking about it and thinking, you know, about how I was going to express these visual images in words. I love art. It plays a big part in my life. I love Dora Maar's black and white images. I love Picasso's early works, his blue and rose period. I'm not quite so keen on his later works. I love the Impressionists, the Post-Impressionists. I love sculpture. I love Henry Moore, Barbara Hepworth. I mean, I could go on and on.
What I would love you to describe for people who are going to read your novel and who have not had the pleasure yet is the main setup of the plot. We have this young upcoming photographer meeting Picasso for the first time. Can you give us a kind of outline? What is the setup between them and the people involved in their lives?
Yes, of course. So first of all, Dora was a well-known established photographer when she met Picasso. She had already exhibited at the Museum of Modern Art in New York and at the International Surrealist Exhibition in London in 1936. So she met him as an equal. She seduced him in a cafe by playing a very transgressive and daring game to attract his attention. She put her hand on the tabletop and stabbed the spaces in between with a penknife. And sometimes she missed. By the time she finished, her hand was covered in blood. And Picasso was absolutely entranced by this. And then I think she further sort of caught him off balance by inviting him to her studio and taking his portrait. So it was very much a meeting of equals. But gradually he chipped away at her confidence and her sense of self. He encouraged her away from photography to painting. And I think there was an element of him not wanting his mistress to be too successful and independent. She wasn't quite as good a painter as she was a photographer. She couldn't get away from his influence. He was serially unfaithful, which also, you know, ate away at her. She found it devastating. So, you know, gradually this fiery and passionate meeting of equals morphed into something much darker and more troubling. And I don't really want to say too much more about what happens, because I don't want to give away the whole plot. But it's about how the balance of power between them shifts.
There is a moment in the story that I also don't want to spoil for the reader, where she encounters another very, very famous personality, not an artist, but somebody else. And to this person, she says, "It's this war. It's happening in my head too." And when I read that sentence, I was immediately reminded of the kind of descent into madness that Virginia Woolf experienced during a very similar time, where the war also reflected the kind of insanity that she couldn't cope with inside herself, but also especially influenced by the insanity of the war happening around her. And I wondered what kind of resources did you tap into in order to portray this conflict, the inner conflict, and then the outer insanity of World War II?
I agree with you about the parallel between Dora Maar and Virginia Woolf, but I was also thinking about the artist Leonora Carrington. There are numerous parallels between Dora, one of which was that they had more famous, more powerful male artist lovers. Leonora was with Max Ernst, and he abandoned her as World War II was breaking out. And, you know, the darkness of world events and the fear and, you know, what was happening in this other troubled relationship did, you know, I thought of that while I was writing. And you're absolutely right about the impact of these two cataclysmic wars on the relationship between Dora and Picasso. And I have her at one point in the book, you know, speculating what would this relationship have been like if it had happened in a time of peace. And there's no doubt that, you know, world events had a deep impact on them.
What you describe so beautifully in all your novels, but in this one in particular, there are places of refuge for Dora whenever she feels truly abandoned and diminished. And that is in the friendships that she develops with other artists, especially women. Could you tell us a little bit about those relationships in her life?
Of course. So female friendship is a very strong theme in this novel. She studied with an artist called Jacqueline Lomba, who absolutely fascinated me. She was as talented as Dora, although she chose to focus on painting, not photography. Her work was featured in the Surrealist exhibition that I mentioned, that Dora's work was in as well. So she was very highly regarded. And actually her love life took a similar turn to Dora's. She met André Breton, the leader of the Surrealists, also in a cafe. And André wasn't interested in her as an artist. He really just wanted her to be a muse and the mother of his child. So she had, you know, she had a battle on her hands to assert her identity, to hold on to her identity while she was with him.
You also write about the relationship that Dora had with her parents, and it's a theme throughout the novel, how that relationship shaped who she became, but also how it transformed when she encountered Picasso.
Yes, well, she was an only child, and it was an extremely intense relationship. Her parents had her late in life, so they were overprotective of her, and she felt pretty stifled, particularly by her mother. Her father was more supportive of her artistic ambitions. And, you know, despite that, she managed to study at these very progressive art schools in Paris. She launched herself as a successful photographer, first as a commercial and fashion photographer, and then she did more experimental artistic work. So there was always kind of this underlying tension. And when she got together with Picasso, her parents were horrified. And, you know, they said, he's a reprobate and this is going to lead to trouble. And Dora was so sucked into the love affair with Picasso that, you know, she said, well, if it's trouble, this is the kind of trouble I want. And that caused a rift. And she reunited with them in the war with much more of an understanding of them, particularly of her mother. And I found that quite moving, you know, to write that Dora gradually discovered parallels between her and her mother and knew more about her mother's struggles and really understood much better why her mother was the kind of parent, you know, she had been.
At one moment in the novel, you write about Dora's own perception of her work, and it is she's looking at her photographs and she had just developed them, and then she says, the prints were better than I had hoped, and to think I had created them with nothing but light. That phrase, nothing but light, made me think that I would love to write a story just with that title. But also you draw a lot of attention to light in the novel. The way you write about it is so beautiful, and you also emphasize its crucial influence on all visual art. And the way you describe the light in this book is, for me, truly poetic. And it made me wonder, for you as a writer, what is your light? What element inspires you and your writing, like light does a visual artist?
That's a great question. I mean, I am fixated by light in a very visual way. And that's part of the reason why I love being in South Africa so much. It's the high sky and the light, which is, you know, a very particular quality of light that I miss in the UK. I guess my other inspiration is the natural world. I live in London, but I try and get out to the parks most days. And I find, you know, just being with trees and being in green spaces roots me and just makes me feel more alive and inspired. And my other great love is music. I learn a lot from music, and I'm very inspired by listening to music, mostly classical.
When you write, do you listen to music?
I can't, because music is too powerful. I find it shuts out everything else. But I actually trained as a classical musician, and I feel there are so many parallels between music and writing, like rhythm and color and tone, alliteration, onomatopoeia. I could go on and on. And so when I listen to music, I'm sort of listening for moods and textures and for dialogue, the way one instrument hands over to another and the whole fits together so beautifully. I'm sort of striving for that when I write.
When you were working on this novel, what did you experience as your greatest challenge, and what was the greatest pleasure of the project?
I think the greatest pleasure was writing about the emotions of the love affair, both positive and negative. Writing about the settings, you know, Paris and the south of France, both so evocative and atmospheric. And writing about the art, which was also a challenge, as I've said, but it turned into a great pleasure. And my main challenge was to give this material, you know, this huge cast of characters, this sweeping period in history, and this 9-year relationship, a convincing narrative shape.
Louisa, I have always been a fan of your work, and I cannot wait until the next one. It always, every time I read a new novel by you, it makes me hungry for more. So I'll be waiting very impatiently. But I just want
to
mention that there is something about this one that I felt projected is the wrong word, that transformed your writing and took it to another level. It shines for me in a new light, if I may say so. And I would like to end our conversation by a quote, by quoting from the novel. It's a sentence that really struck a chord with me, and I think it applies to many of the stories that you have shared with us before, and especially this one. You say, a woman needs something that's just hers, no matter how deeply in love she is.
Well, I think that's absolutely true, you know, of all women. And, you know, for Dora, that was her art and her friendships. And for me, it's my writing. I think it's vital.
I cannot thank you enough for writing this novel, and I look forward to the next one. And I love the fact that I can return to the others that I treasure on my shelves. So I wish you all the very best with it, lots of success, and I hope that it finds its way into many other readers' hearts. The Paris Muse is available in all good bookstores and online, and I cannot emphasize enough that how urgently you need to go out there and get a copy for yourself. And if you are in South Africa this month and have the pleasure of encountering Louisa at one of her events, please go and have it signed.
Thanks for listening to this episode of PageCast. We love hearing from you. So if you'd like to get in touch, please contact us at pagecastpodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, keep reading and listening.